brother.
Does it make a difference which one we're using? Okay. Bobby C., Addict Alcoholic. Grateful to be here tonight. Family and friends, as you can see that we're not a glum lot here. We have a good time. That's why we're here. That's why we're sober and clean. And the guys that are new, women that are new in this program, keep showing up. Your life is going to be happy, joyous, and free if you stick with it. That's a guarantee. And you can ask anybody else that's around here, especially some people that have some sobriety. I got one question for Jennifer. Is this position open for auction? You did a good job, Jennifer. I'm glad we brought some money. I'm glad we brought some money up from Illinois to help pay for some of this stuff. So, and like what Debbie said, you know, in a couple of weeks we're having our convention. So, you know, the main thing I need to talk about tonight. I'm not going to spend a lot of time about the insanity part of my life. I got to tell you some of that could justify why I'm here. It wasn't any fun. You know, when Jim asked me to speak up here a couple months ago, as any addict, you know, we all try to be perfectionists and everything else, and I'm thinking, how do I give the best lead that's ever been done? And so I go through this list of things of what I was like when I was out there and what has changed since I've been in this program, and I'm analyzing it and everything else, and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, think I need to add this to the list. I need to add this. I need to do this. So, Quinn said at dinner tonight. He said, "Tonight you have to be honest." So, and tonight we're going to be honest. And my sponsor said the same thing. He says, "You live the life. You know what to talk about." And yes, I do. I'd like to welcome everybody in Wisconsin and from Illinois that are up here. Thank the convention committee for asking me to be up here. You put on a good show. It's a lot of fun. Conventions are always a lot of fun. And if you can't find a meeting, this is a place where you'll find one, for sure. You'll find some sobriety. I got to do one thing. If you'll hold this microphone for a second. This is all, yeah. Thank you. There you go. Sorry, Dwayne, I can't compete with your style today. you know, I grew up in a fairly normal family. My dad was a high school teacher and coach, football coach, baseball, and he was a disciplinarian. He was a Navy officer, played Big Ten football and baseball, and a real perfectionist. And a lot of times I couldn't live up to his standard, mainly because I wasn't 6'2 and 210. That had a lot to do with it back then. So anyway, I've always liked Wisconsin. You know, when I was in high school, when I was a junior in high school, I was 17 years old, and I knew I was going to turn 18. And this will date me a little bit, but it goes back. This is when the drinking age in Wisconsin was going to be 18. And I said, oh boy, I'm going north. Never drank or drug in high school. Drank my senior year after I graduated high school. And drank 3 quarts of warm beer because I wanted this wonderful, great feeling. And I got it for a while and thought I'd hide it from my dad, went home and, you know, regurgitated all over the bed and everything else. And he thought he'd beat the hell out of me and let me stay there and lay in the stuff. That didn't change anything other than I knew I had to be careful with the alcohol. So I went away to school and everything else and didn't really apply myself there. Drank a little bit there and again, drank for the feeling all the time. Drank to get that good rush and that feeling, and always drank too fast, always threw up. That's why I got to know one place in another city in Wisconsin called Kohler, Wisconsin, because I knew what the toilets were all about. So that wasn't a pleasant thing. So anyway, I got an associate's degree in junior college and went on to school for a while, and that was I'm going to date myself. That was about 1964. The draft was coming into place, and I don't know if my grades were going to keep me out of the service, and that was the time Vietnam was building up. So, and I wanted to get away from my dad and his discipline, so And this is another, you know, self-knowledge decision I made. I enlisted in the Marine Corps for 4 years. Yeah, there you go. And naturally, went overseas after about a year and a half in the service, and spent 15 months in Vietnam in a helicopter squadron. That was exciting. I didn't know they were shooting real bullets. I did find out soon, though. Finished the Marine Corps back in North Carolina. Came back to live in the old neighborhood after I got discharged. And my dad asked me at that time, he says, well, do you smoke any marijuana? And did you do any drugs in Vietnam? I says, no. I says, we're too far north, too close to North Vietnam to do that stuff. That was all the Army's deal. So, but it didn't take long because the guys in the neighborhood had drugs and everything else. And didn't want to drink. I didn't drink that much. And as soon as I started smoking pot, I found, wow, this is better. I don't have to throw up. Don't have to worry about coal in Wisconsin anymore. And started doing, whatever was available. Didn't get involved with cocaine for a while. Got married when I got out of the service. And was a good woman. Didn't know it at that time because I knew better than everybody else and had a whole bunch of self-knowledge and I could run my own life. And she was very supportive. You know, I was married. She let me try to live a single life. I did what the hell I wanted. I stayed out. I played a lot of softball, played a lot of sports, spent a lot of time at the bars. And, you know, there's always dangerous things around those bars. You know, it's called women. So, and I was there to help them entertain themselves. So, it wasn't a good thing. So, that marriage didn't last too long, 3 or 4 years. And, because I thought, I knew better. And I also got involved in the insurance business at that time, and unfortunately, I started making a lot of money fast. And I took all the credit for it. That was my deal. You know, nobody else could do it. It just happened to be a good economic time. We ended up getting divorced after about 4 or 5 years. Little did I know that wasn't a good decision on my end, but. At that time, it didn't, I thought I knew better. And it was my self-will running the show again. My knowledge and my selfishness, and I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I was making a lot of money. I didn't need anybody else. I could get whatever I wanted to get. Gotten introduced to cocaine around the early part of the 80s, especially when I saw the article in Time magazine that said it's only psychologically addicting. That's where it came in, who's a cocaine addict. If you can't relate to that reading, then maybe I shouldn't be in this room, that's for sure. But I certainly do. That went on for a while, started making some money, got involved in some other businesses with a couple guys that played the NFL Football League, and we had some sporting goods stores. We had three of them up in Wisconsin here. And again, at that time, it was easy to, with those guys and their name and their money, it was easy to sign your name to a lot of loans. And that was the time, and this, Jimmy, is that when the prime went in 1979 to 1980 to like 19-20%. It's a lot of money when you owe money, when you got to pay interest on that kind of money. And anyway, we didn't put enough attention to these stores. We had one in downtown Milwaukee, one in Waukesha, one out in Beloit, and one in another city in Ohio. And they went bust, ended up owing a bunch of money on that stuff. So, that's when I became, instead of an insurance agent, I became a loan officer. It's called, I loan money from my clients to pay my debts. Like anything else, like the drugs, I could quit anytime I wanted to quit, just wait and see. And what happened is, I did that Peter, borrow from Peter to pay Paul principle. And that lasted for a number of years. I took it as, well, I'm borrowing, I'm going to pay it back and all that stuff. Played out now, it's just stealing people's money. So then I had a change of heart somewhere along the line. I says, maybe if I would have stayed with this girl I was married, things would be different. I was a changed man. Things will be different this time around. So we got remarried again. Everything changed but me. So that lasted a little while, not too much longer. And then lo and behold, like it says in the big book, I found the woman that understood. you know, that really understood, because she liked to drink, she liked to drug, she liked to party. I could relate to that. So what else you do when you tell you find somebody like that is go ahead and jump into another marriage. Business was not going well. Still owed a lot of money, was still just keeping my head above floating. During this, before I got married for that third time to the girl that understood, I was had a place to live. I was on a consulting fee with a, which you can all relate to, is a beer distributorship. And the guy that was the CEO was also a guy that I supplied with drugs. You know, so he was paying me money to look over his insurance program. And plus they had their nice executive offices with showers and stuff. And so I lived up there, had all the beer I needed to drink down in the warehouse, because after 90 days old, the store's got to return it because they can't sell it after 90 days in Illinois. So I had all the free beer, plus they stored government cheese. So I was in heaven, you know. Had a great place to live, had all the beer and all the cheese I wanted. You know. One insane part of my life. I bounced around doing some stuff. I played some flag football and was doing, at that time, was a little bit into the cocaine, but more into the Quaaludes and barbiturates and stuff. And I thought one night I was going to a flag football game. I was coming down 294, about 70 miles an hour. And I said, it was like 1:30 in the morning. No, not too many people played ball at that time of night. And I knew I had to get off at this exit, so I fly off this exit, roll a brand new 79 Ford over and over three or four times. Here's some insanity. I roll it over, end up upside down. I'm not hurt. Trucker stops. He comes over to see if I'm okay. I'm okay. State trooper pulls up. He looks at me and he goes, you're okay? I said, yeah, I don't need to go anywhere. Car's totaled. He says, well, I got to give you a ticket for leaving a roadway. Yeah, this is back when they didn't drug test you and blow and all that stuff. You got to pass. And he said, where you got to go? I said, well, I was married to the first gal at that time. And he said, I'll drive you up to the Oakbrook toll booth and you can make a phone call. So I get in the back seat and he drives me up there. Get in the phone booth by the toll booth, call her up, and she's going to come and get me. He pulls away. I add the cocaine in my pocket and do a blast. There's no insanity. There's no insane ideas going on in my head at that time. I thought it was perfectly normal. Just crazy crap that went on. What happened with my business, I knew things were going to go bad real soon. They always do. When I came back from Vietnam, I had a real bad attitude with the government. And so I figured I would also create them on my loan portfolio called the IRS. So I withheld some money from them, and they didn't care for it a whole bunch. So same with the mortgage company house. They didn't care, you know, that I didn't pay them. And same on the car. They thought I came out from lunch one day, and I said, who stole my car? So I called the police up, and they said, nobody stole it. Says the bank took it back. And I said, oh, great. I just thought this was all part of normal life. You know, it didn't stop me from drinking. It didn't stop me from drugging. Just continued on. You know, and I was doing a little dealing on the side, ended up becoming who? I became my best customer. Plain and simple, like most of us did. You know, we had to support our habit some way, somehow. Either by stealing, robbing, whatever we were doing, or dealing the stuff. So I knew my business was in trouble. I had an opportunity to merge it with some other guys. And lo and behold, one of the guys was in AA. And he said, you have a drinking problem. I says, we'll cut this deal and we'll merge your business in if you go to AA. Didn't say anything about drugs. So right away I differentiate between what the truth and the false is. And you know, all I cared about was cutting the deal. You know, my word wasn't any good, so I was gonna do what I wanted to do. So I cut the deal and said, we're gonna go to an AA meeting at 10 o'clock. You know, at least two or three times a week. I said, okay, no problem, Bill, we'll do that. So I lived up to that for a while. But, you know, like again, he never said anything about drugs. You know, and I never learned anything about the 12 steps when I went. I was there just to appease him. Was still doing cocaine behind his back. That deal didn't go. things started to really get crappy in business. This other woman that I found that was the answer to all my life problems. That didn't go very well anymore. So we ended up selling a piece of property, and being pretty astute, I took all my equity out of it and put it in $500 money orders because I wouldn't spend it as fast. So, and I now find out that, you know, banks will cash two or three at a time, easily. To get to the end of this, all this insane story and everything else, you know, it's all based self-centered selfishness, all about me. Didn't care about anybody else. It's like what the big book says, you know, self-centeredness and selfishness is the root of our evil. And that's our problem. And we wonder why we get hurt because of our selfish acts, because we step on people's toes and they retaliate. I continue to read that part of the big book all the time. You know, and I took all the credit for all these wonderful plans I did and how my life was, and this is what was not how I planned to live. I didn't plan to have a life like that. I didn't plan to be in Cocaine Anonymous. I didn't plan to be in recovery. I says, but I surely earned a seat here. And that was it, you know. It got to the end where I was doing cocaine on a daily basis and, you know, morning, noon, and night. That's the way it was, you know. I got down to probably 150 pounds. Obviously, Cocaine Anonymous has been good for me. I took that money and I went and lived in a hotel for 10 days and didn't know what I wanted to do. Didn't know if I wanted to live or die. Didn't care. Didn't have enough guts to pull a gun out and shoot myself in the head. All I know is that after 4 or 5 days in this hotel, the lady, the maid that cleans the place, I walk out and she goes, "You're still here. You're still here." And after about 10 days, you know, I was slowly getting out of money. And at the very end, didn't know what I wanted to do. Somewhere, somehow, I truly believe God came in my life. He let me pick up the phone. I called my parents who were living out in Arizona. I think my dad was smarter than anybody, and he was smarter all the way along during this whole deal. They moved out there just to get away from, I think, his kids, so we had to learn to live on our own and survive. And obviously, I didn't do a good job of it. And I opened up and asked for help. I said, I need help. I'm in trouble. This is what's going on. And he sort of knew what was going on. Every time they'd come in town from Arizona, my mother would say the same thing: "You still have that cold." I go, "It's the air conditioning." You know, more crap. More just, you know, just not able to be honest and tell the truth. And that's what happened. I asked for help, and my mother and dad said, my mother being innocent, she goes, "What did we do?" And I go, "You didn't do anything." I says, "You didn't put the drugs in me. You didn't do anything." She says, "Well, call your sister." So I called my sister. My sister got me in a treatment facility for 30 days. And I was happy to go into treatment at that time. Even though I know God helped me pick up that phone call, make that phone call. But also it was, I thought I'd get some respite away from the IRS, from the guys I owed money to, and everything else. And for the money I owed clients money. 30 days in a treatment facility, you know, gave me a break. I was finally clean physically for 30 days. Finally got some oxygen in my brain to think a little bit. Got introduced to the 12-step program. Understand the disease concept. Understand that I had a mental obsession that kicks off the physical allergy. Man, it only took me, 15 years to figure that out. And I didn't figure it out. I had to be told that. I had to be instructed in it. I had to be educated on it. I had to have an open mind about what was going on. And the whole thing, if you want to change, you need to work this program. I said, "What's wrong with the way I'm living?" I said, you're living on self-will and self-centeredness. You're not going to make it. You got to find out you have no power. I was powerless. I finally conceded to my innermost self that I had to surrender, that I was powerless over drugs and alcohol. And like the guys that I sponsor, and the same what we say all the time, you had to find the power. Found the power in step two. It gave me some hope that I could be sane. Didn't say I'm going to, by working step two, I'm going to be sane. It says, came to believe the power greater was believe to return to sanity. I have to work the rest of more steps to get to that point. Anyway, I was in treatment for 30 days and ready to get released. And the facility, we had a meeting with my sister and my brother, and didn't have a car because that was given back to the gal I was married to, who's now, we're now getting divorced. So she continued making, paying the payments. She wanted it, she got it. I didn't have any money, she might as well take it. So they said, they recommend I go to a 6-month aftercare program. And I go, hey, 30 days, I don't need it. What do I need to go there for? I'm okay. And my sister, being kind as she was, she goes, well, where are you gonna live? You're not gonna live with us unless you go. I said, well, that's extortion. She goes, take your choice, either that. And I still didn't think life reality hit into me very much until I got out of the 30-day treatment facility. I agreed to, well, since my sister was gonna let me live there, and her condition was that I would go to meetings and go to this 4 nights a week aftercare program who they could drug test you randomly at any time. I needed that. I needed that life because I didn't trust myself, and certainly they didn't trust me. What my sister wanted to know one other thing before she let me move in. Are any of these guys that you owe money to violent? I said, well, the IRS isn't violent. I says, but the other guys I owe money to, they're all taken care of because I know their way of collection isn't the way I like. So those guys were taken care of. And you know what kind of people those they are. You either pay them or you get hurt, one of the two. So anyway, I went to the 6-month aftercare program. They had a CA meeting across the street in the hospital. And we got to go over there on a Thursday night meeting called Coconuts. It used to be over there. Is it still there on Thursday night? Okay. Okay. I knew you guys would tell me. But that's where I went through treatment, was in our Northwest District up there in that area. So I used to go to a lot of meetings up there. And they told me in this aftercare program, I need to get a sponsor. And I said, okay. And I said, what's that? Well, you need some guy that's going to sponsor you to help you work this program. So I went over there and I saw a little guy over there about this high who had polished fingers and everything else. And I went up to him and I said, Michael, will you sponsor me? And he goes, no. I said, well, you know who you're talking to. I said, you don't want to sponsor, you don't want to help me? He goes, no. And I go, oh, okay. Oh, this is a hell of a great program. You know, I can't even get somebody to help me, you know. So I went back the next week, and being persistent, I wouldn't accept the word no. I went up to him again and said, Michael, you sponsor me? He goes, yeah, you're going to call me every day, you're going to work the steps, and you're going to pray in the morning? I says, I can do that. I says, I don't have anything else to do, so I can do that. So Michael R. was my sponsor, and we worked the steps. He got me involved in this thing called service work. And right away, no hesitation. Not service work where on a committee you're doing anything. Service work like making a coffee, being a GSR, simple stuff. Not handling the money. You weren't ready to handle any money yet. So, and I started to get a grasp of the program. And I was living with my sister and her husband in a city downtown off Lakeshore Drive. And the meetings I went to were up in Skokie, which was 37 miles. I still had a job opportunity out in Oak Brook, so I'm making this trip from downtown Chicago to Oak Brook to Skokie on a daily basis. My brother was kind enough to me to bring me a 1983 Mazda 3-speed with 50,000 miles on it. When I got rid of it, I had 170. All meeting traffic. It got me. Somehow that car kept me going. We had a friend of ours that was in our group that was a mechanic. He had a shop up in Park Ridge. I'd go there before I go to a meeting. I'd answer his phone and help him out. He'd keep that car running. Him and God kept it going. And it just worked. It just worked. Things just kept going. I kept doing it. They convinced me in my mind that if I work this program one day at a time, your life's going to get better. I go, ah, that's a unique concept. And I said, just today I got to do it. That's all. Clean and sober today. Be honest today. Help people. It's not about you. Good things come in your life. Don't take any credit for it. Thank God. He's the one that gave you the opportunity. And if you want to believe anything else, then you're really still full of crap. So I continue to do a lot of service work, work through the steps. You know, I was probably two years sober. You know, all these consequences I had, you know, the IRS just didn't walk away. The Department of Insurance didn't just walk away. The guys at this agency that I merged with that I owe them money to didn't walk away. Those are financial restitutions I had to make. I had to work them out. Things must have starting to get better in my life at that time. I made the arrangements to pay the IRS. On a monthly, started making a little bit of money. Everything I made was going to pay financial amends. Still living with my sister for a year, year and a half. She finally said, we're moving out west to the suburbs and you got 30 days to get out. So I found a friend that had a house. I moved in with him and we shared a house. And little did I know, after I was in there 3 or 4 months, he's really dealing pot out of the basement. So, you know, I go, okay. At least in a separate entrance, separate everything else. And but I didn't have much choice. The price was right. And if I kept doing what I was doing, that was his business at that time. Things really started to get better. I got to a point on this money that I owed this agency, on my client's money. The guy filed some charges against me. There were going to be felony charges. Didn't have the money to make the restitution. Ended up going to court and getting things settled. It got reduced to a misdemeanor as long as I paid the restitution. Didn't have much money. Somewhere along the line, some of the people in this program had some faith in me and trust and were willing to front me and let me loan the money, and I agreed I'd only do it if I could pay you back on a monthly basis. And I did that for a number of years, about 2.5 years it took me to pay them back. It worked. I had confidence in this program. You know, I just said, you know, I don't have friends like that. This program created some great friends. You know, and I had a good sponsor who led me along the way, who kept my ass in service work. You know, I got to be a GSR. I got to chair a meeting. Then we had this thing called the, we didn't have districts at that time, so we still had an area. Said, you need to come down to Grand Hospital on Sundays. I go, what for? He says, you're not doing anything else, come down there. So got down there, ended up being, that's where the GSR showed up. That was the area. Started to get involved in that, and we had a CA office, got involved in there. They asked me, they needed a special events person, so we did some special events. Something to do, somewhere to go, someplace for addicts to go and have a good time, you know. Instead of sitting home thinking on a Saturday night, go be, have some fellowship with some people, and hopefully we'll raise a few dollars. Not a whole bunch of money, but we'll have a place to go and keep our noses where we need to be at. It's a clean environment. And you get to know people and you get to help them at the same time. So I did that for a couple years. Moved on to be the assistant treasurer. Then I got to be the treasurer for the area. Again, here's a guy that's you know, was stealing money from clients, and all of a sudden they're trusting me with some of the area's money, making bank deposits. The only issue I had was one thing we agreed upon was to put these bus placards in the CTA buses. They were going to be $2,500. I'm sorry, Brian, I can't forget this stuff. $2,500 in a CTA. I says, those things won't last 30 days up there, and we're going to waste this money putting it up there. Michael took me on the side. He goes, it's not your money. The group conscience. I says, the group wants to do it, write the check. It's that simple. I said, okay. But they did not last long in the buses. So. But maybe somebody got a message out. Maybe somebody read them before they were tore down or all marked up with gang signs or whatever. Maybe somebody got a message out of there. That's the whole thing what Michael was telling me. You know, the decision is not yours. The decision is to carry the message some way, somehow. Somebody got something out. I know they did. That's why I believe today. That's the important part. Let's see, what else? Got to be the treasurer, then it was the chairperson for the area and all that stuff. And this was over like about 10 years sober. Had some sponsees, started getting some sponsees. One of my sponsees is here tonight. My sponsor's here tonight. And grateful for those guys showing up and a lot of friends from Illinois. Really appreciate the support, guys. Know you all. And the guys from Wisconsin, a lot of you up here too. And, you know, I love you all. That's the important thing. I need to talk about the steps a little bit more. You know, I had to get honest in the first step. And I use the word honesty in all the steps because you got to be honest in every one of them. You honestly got to believe in a higher power. You honestly got to do God's will. You just can't talk it and say it. You honestly got to do a thorough four-step. Whoops, one little mark of one I didn't want to leave on there. Left one out. Wasn't going to do it. But finally it came to a head because you just can't. If you're still willing to do it, it will come to your head sooner or later, and the opportunity will come to you. And it did at a business meeting. I knew the guy was in the same industry I was in. I didn't lose my insurance license. It was just on probation for a couple of years. So I ran into this guy at a meeting who was an old business partner who got me in the business. And you know, I said before I was a loan officer, I used to sign these promissory notes. I'll pay you back sometime, whenever. So I owed him some money and it came to a discussion and I agreed to pay the money. That was taken care of. But I wasn't gonna go to him. You know, I had that attitude of, well, he hurt me as much as I hurt him. And that's not what it says in the book. The book says to go make it whether he admits it or not. It's not his deal. It's what cleaning up my side of the street's all about. So work that fifth step, made those amends in 8 and 9. You know, 6 and 7 are important steps. It's about change, changing who I am, knowing about what those 7 deadly sins are. You know, jealous, envy, pride. Pride and ego is a big one with me. And again, any good things that come in my life, I can't take success for them. How are we doing? I'm fine, Brian. A little time? Okay, thanks. Like you guys said, you know, since I'm the last one up here, I have a captive audience, so. But it won't be too much longer. So anyway, I got to do all that service work in the area. I was probably 10, 12 years sober. And Michael, my sponsor, retired and moved to Florida. So I said, well, what am I going to do now? Don't have a sponsor. So I went around a couple months and I said, I can't go around unattended. Can't do it. I got to be responsible to somebody. So I said the best person to ask would be Michael's sponsor. So I asked Mitch to be my sponsor, and Mitch is a great, loving guy and tells me what it's like when I need to be told. But our relationship is it's a two-way street. We help each other, and we're great friends. And I love you, Mitch, you know that. And I love the guys that I sponsor. We still have a great relationship. I sponsor 6 guys. One of my sponsorees, what do you got, 16 years, 17 years, Jimmy? Okay. We have today. That's what we got, brother. But it was interesting, you know, I was getting a little complacent not doing any service work for 2 or 3 months, and we had some issues at the Illinois area about World Service Delegates and Brian, so, you know, like Brian does things. you know, it backs you into the corner as with guilt. and he goes, we need a delegate. I said, I don't want to be a delegate. I don't want to go out there for 4 years. I don't want to do that. Don't want to, you know, using that I word. You know, I know better. I think I should. I know. I could. I would. And, you know, Michael used to say that to me all the time. He says, listen to what you just said. It's all about you. I said, okay. So this fellowship saved my life, and I need to give something back continually. I just can't do 8, 9, 10, whatever the period of time is. The time makes no difference. I got to continue to give back. That's the way I'm going to keep this program, because I got to continue to give away and continue to help people. If I don't, you know, it's just going to go to waste, you know. So I got to continue to get it, and I got to continue to grow to give it away. And I didn't learn that. I was told that. I was taught by the guys that sponsored me and other people in the program. So I agreed to run for a position of delegate. And my good friend Tom, who I play golf with, was already a delegate. And he said, oh, it'd be a great experience. We'll go to California for a week. I said, okay, good deal. I said, maybe we'll play golf. I said, he said, probably won't have a lot of time for that. So, but it was about the business of CA, and I like being in business, and I wanted to find out what was going on. And again, it's still part of growth. I had to learn how to be patient and tolerant in California. Too bad Tony D here is our chairperson, from Wisconsin, isn't here tonight, because he'd probably tell me I'm out of order. But but it was a worthwhile experience. I asked my sponsor, Mitch, if I should be a delegate, and he goes, and he's so subtle about things, he goes, well, you have a lot to offer. I go, okay, I know what that means. So I put my hand in the air and ran for the position and got elected. It was a worthwhile thing. I learned a lot about what goes on in the World Service Office. Learned about what other people do around the world in the country, and met some great people. Now that's not a terrible deal. That's a pretty good deal. I got on the H&I Committee of World Service, and like Brian said, H&I is dear to my heart. That's how I know Jennifer so well. We had some great discussions in H&I, and she has taken over the position that I had out there about the inmate referral program, which gets the letters from inmates through World Service Office, and we move them around to whatever H&I area is in the country. I do a Tuesday night meeting at the jail in DuPage County. They have a great program there. And, you know, it's one thing I won't do when I go to that jail meeting is I never wear an orange shirt. I don't want to be mistaken. You know, and it's like going to jail. You get frisked and everything else, no keys turned in, everything else, nothing in your pockets. And they have a good program there. We were getting 4 or 5 inmates at a meeting. They have a 12-step program during the day there. They put they made one section of a pod, of a recovery pod, and we started getting 5, 6 guys, finally getting 7, 8. And now they put us on every Tuesday night, and we're getting 18, 20 prisoners, inmates a night. It works. It works. This is the important thing. You know, where's the payoff? We have a Sunday morning meeting at 8 o'clock in the morning. These guys that are inmates, and I said, when you get released? I said, well, you want? Will you sponsor me? I says, can't, against the rules of the jail. Can't give you my name, my phone number, but if you want to see me, this is where I'll be on Sunday morning at 8 o'clock. There's the bread and the pudding. I think that's a good saying for it. Is when I see them Sunday morning, they show up after they're released. We got 4 or 5 guys that show up on a Sunday morning that we're in the jail. Yeah. Guys are working a program. Plain and simple. That's what it's all about. And every time we close a meeting in the jail, I tell them one thing and one thing only. You guys got one or two choices when you leave here. Go back to where you were, and I'll see you here, back in jail again, or else I'll see you at a meeting. And give somebody some help. And a lot of them are choosing to work a program recovery. Jail's not any fun. I don't even like going on Tuesday night, but I know I'm getting out at 9 o'clock. Well, we need to be there, and I know Jennifer's doing some things up in Wisconsin. And if you get an opportunity to do an H&I meeting, whether it's in a jail or any kind of facility, please step up and do it. Mitch gave me a suggestion what I should need to talk about, and that's about service work. And I'm going to close this down so we can get this dance on. So, you know, the whole thing about service work, a lot of people want to do it, but a lot of people don't stick with the commitment. And that's the whole thing about service work. You make a commitment for a period of time, stick with it. And in the spirit of rotation, get somebody else prepared to step in for you. You need to do that. We need to keep this program going. That's the only way we're going to continue to grow. Those guys that are patients now that are here tonight, you know, think about what's been given you today, an opportunity to get out and get some recovery and know what it's about. Get involved in this program. Come on back. Your life will change. Mine certainly did. You know, it's just amazing what's going on in my life. You know, all this financial problems that I had and everything else, that's all been changed. That's all been paid, recovered, you know, and God has given me everything I need and more in my life today. Absolutely more than I need. But I would never get any of it if I didn't work this program and trust in God, trust the people in it, and work with the guys that know better than I do. My life got better. Things got better financially, morally, physically, everything else. And I continue to work the program because I got to continue to grow. Just because I have so many years of sobriety, you know, my sobriety date is it's my mother's birthday I use, even though I sobered 2 days before because I knew I wouldn't forget it, is June the 21st, 1991. And Brian, and the other thing is, you know, Brian and I beat the odds. You know, they told us when we were in treatment that maybe 1 out of 10 of us would stick and work this program. We've been friends for a long time, ever since back in 1991. So it'll work if you work it. Get some help. And that's the whole thing. Even today, I got to continue to ask for help. I do not have all the answers. If I ever forget that, I'm in deep trouble. So you got to continue to ask for help. And you'll get it from people in this program. You know, and don't survey 18 people to get your help. You know, go to your sponsor who knows you the best, and they'll help you out. And it's the same with the guys I sponsor. You know, it's a two-way street with them. They help me as much as I help them. And that's what this program is all about. I just got a new sponsee, and like anybody new, it's a challenge for me as well as him. And it's also good for both of us because we get to go back and work the steps again. And, you know, God gave me the opportunity to live through all the crap that I did and everything else. And I have to take that time and give it back. That's what it's about. I want to thank everybody for being here. Thanks, CA Wisconsin. Love you all.